Chapter 60. Gradually, Amar became aware that Pitt was not acting as he should. Pitt did not fall dead. Instead, he turned, and Amar saw the devil's own smile. Stunned, Amar knew he'd been outwitted. He realized now Pitt had expected a cowardly attack from the rear and protected his back with a bulletproof shield under the bulky ski jacket. And with a numbing shock, he saw the gloved hand hanging from the sleeve was fake. A magician's trick. The real hand had materialized, a hand clutching a big Colt 45 automatic that protruded from the partially unzipped ski jacket. Amar aimed the Ruger again, but Pitt fired first. Pitt's first shot took Amar in the right shoulder and spun him sideways. The second smashed through his chin and lower jaw. The third shattered one wrist as he threw it up to his face. The fourth passed through his face from side to side. Amar rolled to the gravel and sprawled on his back, uncaring and oblivious to the gunfire that erupted over him, not knowing that Pitt had leapt uninjured through the door of the crushing mill before Amar's men belatedly opened fire. He was only vaguely aware of Eben dragging him to safety behind a steel water tank as a short burst of fire from inside the crushing mill sprayed the ground around them. Slowly his hand groped up Eben's arm until he clutched the solid-muscled shoulder. Then he pulled his friend downward.
"I cannot see you," he rasped.
Eben removed a large surgical pad from a pack on his belt and gently pressed it over the torn flesh that once held Amar's eyes.
"Allah and I will see for you," said Eben.
Amar coughed and spit out the blood from the shattered chin that had seeped down his throat.
"I want that Satan Pitt and the hostages hacked to pieces. Our attack has begun. Their lives are measured in seconds. If I die, kill Yazid."
"You will not die."
Amar went through another coughing spasm before he could speak again.
"No matter. The Americans will destroy the helicopter now. You must escape the island another way. Leave. Leave me. That is my final request of you."
Wordlessly, without acknowledging the plea, Eben lifted Amar in his arms and began walking away from the scene of the battle. When Eben spoke, his voice was hoarse but soft.
"Be of strong spirit, Suleiman Aziz," he said. "We will return to Alexandria together."
Pitt barely had time to leap through the door, whip off the two bulletproof vests from under the back of his coat, replace one in the front, and return the second to Giordino before a hail of concentrated fire drilled through the thin wooden walls.
"Now the jacket is ruined," Pitt grunted, pressing his body into the floor. "You'd have been dead meat if he'd plugged you in the chest," said Giordino, wiggling into his vest. "How'd you know he was going to shoot when your back was turned?"
"He had bad breath and beady eyes."
Findlay began scrambling from window to window, throwing grenades as fast as he could yank the activating pins.
"They're here!" he yelled.
Giordino rolled across the plank floor and poured a continuous fire from behind a wheelbarrow full of ore. Pitt snatched up the Thompson just in time to stop two terrorists who had somehow managed to climb into the shattered side office. Amar's small army charged the building from all sides with guns blazing. There was no stopping the tide of the savage onslaught. They swarmed in everywhere. The sharp crackle of the terrorists' small-caliber AK-47s and the deep stutter of Pitt's 45-caliber Thompson were punctuated by the boom of Findlay's shotgun. Giordino fell back to the crushing mill, laying down a covering fire for Pitt and Findlay until all three had reached the temporary protection of their Mickey Mouse fort. The terrorists were momentarily stunned to find no enemy cringing or throwing up their hands in surrender. Once inside the building, they'd expected to inundate their unprotected enemy with sheer numbers. Instead, they found themselves caught naked by a withering fusillade from the mill and were cut down like milling cattle. Pitt, Giordino, and Findlay decimated the first wave. But the Arabs were fanatically brave, and they learned fast. An intensified gunfire and the blast from several grenades engulfed the cavernous room ahead of the next assault. Bedlam. The dead heaped the floor, and the Arabs took cover behind the bodies of their dead comrades. It was a frightening scene. Guns blasting, grenades exploding, the shouts and curses in two languages from two cultures as different as night and day. The building shook from the reverberations of gunfire and the concussions of the grenades. Shrapnel and bullets flayed the sides of the great mechanical mill like sparks from a bucket of molten steel. The air was filled with the pungent smell of gunpowder. Fire broke out in a dozen places and was completely ignored.
Giordino threw a grenade that blew off the tail rotor of the helicopter. Even with the last hope of escape gone now, the Arabs irrationally fought all the harder. Pitt's ancient Thompson slammed deafeningly and then stopped. He ejected the 50-round rotary drum and inserted another, his last. There was a cold, calculated determination he'd never felt before. He and Giordino and Findlay had no intention of throwing in the towel. They had long passed the point of no return and found no fear of death behind it. They hung on grimly, fighting for their very existence, tenaciously giving better than they received. 3 times the Arab terrorists were driven back, and 3 times they charged forward in the face of the murderous fire. Their badly diminished force regrouped again and launched a final suicide assault, closing the ring tighter and tighter. The Arab Muslims could not understand their enemy's ferocity, how they could fight with such bloody-minded precision, why they were so outrageously defiant. The Americans fought desperately only to live, while they themselves sought a blessed death and martyrdom as salvation. Pitt's eyes stung from the smoke, and tears streamed down his cheeks. The whole crushing mill was vibrating. Bullets ricocheted off the steel sides like angry hornets, 4 of them tearing through Pitt's sleeve and slightly grazing the skin. Recklessly, the Arabs threw themselves against the crushing mill and scurried over the makeshift barricade. The shooting match quickly turned into a man-to-man struggle as the 2 groups met in a savage, brawling mass of bodies. Findlay went down as 2 bullets struck him in his unprotected side. Yet he remained on his knees, feebly swinging his empty shotgun like a baseball bat. Giordino, wounded in 5 places, gamely heaved ore rocks with his right hand, his left arm dangling useless from a bullet through the shoulder. Pitt's Thompson fired its last cartridge, and he hurled a big gun in the face of an Arab who suddenly reared up before him. He yanked the Colt automatic from his belt and fired at any face that lurched through the smoke. He felt a stinging sensation at the base of the neck and knew he'd been hit. The Colt quickly emptied, and Pitt fought on, chopping the heavy gun like a small club. He began to taste the beginnings of sour defeat. Reality no longer existed. Pitt felt as if he were fighting a nightmare. A grenade went off, a crushing explosion that deafened him by its closeness. A body fell on top of him, and he was caught off balance and thrown backward. His head struck against a steel pipe, and an expanding ball of fire flashed inside his head. And then, like a wave breaking in the surf, the nightmare swept over and smothered him.